Hey, everybody, you're listening to Beyond 1894. This is the official podcast of Louisiana Tech University. I'm Gavin Kelly from the Office of University Communications. Our guest for this episode is Lori Sheffa. She's a Louisiana Tech graduate who has had a career in entertainment marketing. Normally, I get to talk to our guests across the table in our studio, but Lori here is joining us virtually from the West Coast. So I guess my first question, Lori, is how's the weather over there?
Well, I have to correct you. It's not the West Coast. It's the Best Coast.
Okay. There you go. From here on out, I got you.
It's because of the great weather. I mean, it's probably 70 degrees and sunny. It's that way almost every day, except for the occasional day of rain. And then we all freak out and go to our, you know, safe rooms and pray it's not going to be the end of times.
Yeah. I would say typically I'd be jealous of you. You know, I'm sure you know summers in Louisiana. You're familiar. Blistering, sweltering heat, but you know, currently it's not too bad.
I remember Louisiana Tech. It's so good to be on here with you guys. I miss you guys. I haven't been to Ruston in way too long.
Yeah, I do think, you know, I was telling you kind of before we hit record, I think you should get on back. And I know that it's easier said than done, but I think you'll sort of be impressed with the state of campus, and it'll be, I think, a lot like you remember it, but it will also be very different. So next time you are over this way from the Best Coast.
As long as Wilmart is still there. Is Wilmart still there? Do you know what Wilmart is?
Wilmart? Because, I mean,
Wilmart is that frozen daiquiri. It was a trailer when I was there, and I graduated in 86, and it was a dry county, and you had to drive out to get to alcohol. You had to drive out to the county line, and then just over the county line was this trailer, and it was Wilmart, and it was where you went in and you ordered like frozen daiquiris, is all I can tell you. These giant styrofoam cups, get back in your car. Not a good idea. I'm not suggesting this is good. And drive back to your sorority party or whatever, football game. So is that still there or no?
Well, Wilmart doesn't ring any bells, but there's definitely places to do that, and you will be maybe not surprised to learn that the whole dry county, so you have to kind of go to the edge and cheat the system a little bit, that hasn't changed. So actually, I think last year, some local legislation has kind of got us moving in a more less dry situation. So gotcha. That's a very recent thing. So that part of it has not changed too much since you've been gone.
Very interesting. Okay.
So speaking of since you've been gone and, you know, you're kind of thinking back to the time you spent here, where are you from? Because we're going to talk about kind of how you got to Tech. So where are you from originally?
I'm an only child, and I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And where I was a very creative kid. I would, you know, in my free time, I was writing, I was cartooning, I was doing creepy ventriloquist shows in my garage for my neighbors.
As one does, so, right? I think we've all done it.
It does, as one does. And so I was always that kid who was doing something creative. I didn't know where it was all going to lead me, but it led me eventually to where I am now, which is in entertainment. So
that's, so Atlanta's not, you know, exactly next door to Louisiana Tech. So as you're sort of focusing on your creative outlets and you're realizing kind of that that's something you want to turn into a career path, how do you end up in Ruston?
Well, what happened was my dad got transferred in the middle of my junior year in high school from Atlanta to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
And that's where I met identical twin sisters, Melanie and Melinda Hudson, who also happened to be Louisiana Tech alumni.
Mm-hmm.
That's where fate took its turn and led me to Ruston, because after we graduated from high school in 1982, in a weird coincidence, they moved, Melanie and Melinda and their parents moved back to Monroe, Louisiana, and my father got transferred to Monroe, Louisiana. So we were all back in, we were all in Louisiana, and because Melanie and Melinda had this strong connection to Tech, they applied and decided to go to Tech. And I just was like, I don't know anybody, and I'm just going to apply to Tech.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it is today where, you know, you would have a college counselor who would tell you to apply to like 15 different schools. And then you know, you go to interviews and you whittle it down. At least it wasn't for me. And so I kind of just tagged along, if you can believe that, to Louisiana Tech because of Melanie and Melinda. And at that point in time, by the time I got to college, I had developed a real strong interest in journalism. I wanted to be the next Jessica Savage. I don't know if you know that name, but at the time, she was a very popular news anchor on the NBC Nightly News.
Okay.
Very popular. And so I kind of wanted to be Barbara Walters, Jessica Savage. That's what I wanted to be. And so I ended up being a journalism major at Louisiana Tech. I was a minor in speech. So that's what led me there. And what I ended up starting to do as a student there.
So that's, I guess, my gut reaction to hearing that is the sort of creative, you know, childhood that you mentioned, the sort of end result that I would think that would lead to is not typically journalism. So how, during your time at Tech, are you still keeping that creative side of you intact, you know?
Well, I got really involved at Tech. I was involved in a lot of things. I was in a sorority. I was a Kappa Delta. I was in student government. I was the vice president of the class, actually. I worked for the Tech Talk newspaper, not only writing articles, but also selling advertising, which is interesting.
I was about to say, maybe I'm starting to see a little bit of a connection.
Yeah, a little bit. And I also worked in the journalism department with the legendary Wiley Hilburn. I don't know if you know that name, but he was the head of the department at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, a respected and loved journalist in his own right, where he wrote for several newspapers and had columns and whatnot. And so I worked in the journalism department. I found him very intimidating, by the way. I know he's really sweet, but I was scared of him. He had these little wire glasses and he would kind of tilt his head down and look over the glasses when he would be critiquing your column. You know, it's terrifying. Anyway, great. But I worked under him. I worked with another person named, he was a professor there named Ron White, who was involved in the Tech Talk newspaper and mentored me quite a bit. So I really just threw myself into Tech. I was just doing the social stuff with the sorority, the student government. I was very involved in anything journalism related. I was there and in part of it. So I was a busy student and really enjoyed my time there. But what happened was, right, not long after I started at Tech my freshman year, my parents moved back to Chattanooga. So what happened there was, in my summers between my years at Tech, I would go home and I would intern at the local CBS TV station there. And my desire, obviously, was to be an intern in the news department so I could get, you know, some experience to become the anchor one day, right? So I'd go home in the summers. And one summer, I did work in the news department, and I found it completely surprisingly unexciting. I thought it was very dry, not creative. Sure. Again, I'm the creative. The news is basically, what are the facts? I'm reporting the facts. So it really was surprising. I didn't really take to it as much as I had hoped. But one summer, I worked in the production department, working on, you know, the studio cameras and the teleprompter for the newscast. And that was kind of interesting, but still not my jam. And then the last summer, there was a little department called the promotion and marketing department. And I was a helper in that department. I was an intern. And that was it. It was like the epiphany, you know, it was like the perfect blend of creativity and journalism, because the job of the promotion department is to promote the news. So you're, and the syndicated shows. So you're doing a little creative work and you're getting to do something that's creative and based in journalism, and it requires writing and that kind of thing. So it all worked out. It was like, it was a little bit of a detour for me, but I learned that from interning. You can really find your spot. It's really important to do internships.
I agree. And I also, so when you took on that internship, that kind of was that epiphany for you. What sort of things were you doing in that role?
Well, gosh, it's a smaller market. Chattanooga is, like, at the time, it was the 80th largest market. So, you know, not a small market, but not a big market either. So the promotion director, which was a department of one,
of course, as always,
my assistant, you know, helping out, would do anything from writing the teaser copy for the anchors to read, saying, you know, coming up tonight, 11 is a hurricane coming or whatever, to driving the anchors in a convertible in the local parade. You know, they kind of do everything. They're the cheerleader, if you will, of the TV station. And so I kind of got to do a little bit of everything. And it wasn't a union station, which made it possible also for me to touch equipment, like editing equipment.
Oh, okay.
You know, a lot of stations are unionized. And if you're not part of a union, you can't edit. And or if you do, you can't have it on the air. So I was on not only writing promo copy, shooting promos, editing promos and getting them on the air. I was doing a little bit of everything. And that's the way you learn, is by hands-on, because unfortunately tech didn't offer television type studies back then. They may now, I'm not sure, but that's the one thing about it. They don't really teach what I ultimately ended up doing for a career in college, not many colleges anyway. And that's kind of one of my things I keep coming up to people and telling. I've spoken at a lot of schools and saying, you really need classes that, you know, can prepare students for this line of work. I don't think people even realize this line of work exists. Mm-hmm. I kind of tripped into it. I'm the accidental, you know, tourist on this, because I would never have known otherwise if it hadn't been for my internships. So I'm a big proponent of, you know, internships. Also, if there's a way to get some classes or, you know, anything into our university level, it'd be great. I think everybody knows about trailers for movies, but, you know,
yeah,
this is a whole career choice you can do if you know how to get in there. So,
interesting. So we'll go from there. As you're like sort of honing in these things that you like to do, and you're realizing that like this is now a potential career path for you, when do you start to decide there's somewhere else for me to go from here? And then where does that end up being?
Well, at the time I was in, you know, like I said, Chattanooga, it's once you're in that local television market kind of path, most people want to go to a higher market, a bigger market. Like mm-hmm. New York is the number one market. LA is the second largest market. And the higher you go, the more resources you have, bigger budgets, you get paid more, you know, all this stuff. So I was very ambitious. So I went from Chattanooga to Buffalo, which was the 30th largest market at the time. Then I went to Dallas, which was a top 10 at that point. That's where I met my husband, was in Dallas, and he was working at the same TV station. And so we, you know, met and fell in love, got married, moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Then we went to Cincinnati. And at that point in Cincinnati, we had two kids, and we're like, and they were 3 and 1 at the time, two boys. And at that point, I'm like, I don't want to keep moving to get more money or more whatever. I want to get to a place where I can stay at a company and grow within, and our kids will be in school and we're not uprooting them anymore. Because once they get into kindergarten, we didn't want to have to keep changing schools. So it just so happened a job opened at the CBS television network in Los Angeles, and I got it. And moved to LA in 1997 and have been here ever since. And it was great because I started at one position and kind of worked my way up, just like I'd hoped I would. And my husband worked in radio. He's in sales, but it all worked out. It was really a great move for us.
So, I mean, you kind of did a lap in terms of going countrywide and going to these different places, and you ended up in LA. And like you said, you've been there since then. So,
yeah.
Obviously size and like you said, resources is obvious, but like, how does operating in a market like that compare to somewhere much smaller? Like I'm sure just the sheer number of people in the city and things like that affect, you know, the type of work that you do. Like you're closer to different types of people that affect your job. So, I mean, what is it like moving to LA and settling there?
Well, LA was scary to begin with, just because I didn't know anybody here. We had two toddlers, and I was scared to death. You know, what am I going to do with these kids? I've got this very demanding full-time job, and I had to get a nanny. It was just, it was terrifying. But I ended up getting connected through a couple of people from Cincinnati who knew people in LA at CBS at the time. And they connected me to them, who ended up being just amazing resources for just plugging into schools and figuring out all the personal stuff that put me on edge a lot. But once I got into the work, it was fantastic. You know, it wasn't news promotion anymore. It was entertainment promotion. So now I'm working on launching Survivor and, you know, The Big Bang Theory. It's a totally different vibe. And I absolutely loved it. News was great. But, you know, it all starts to feel the same when it's, you know, news at 11, news at 10. Entertainment marketing is, I think, so much more fun because it's never the same thing twice. You're always launching a new show. And sometimes the shows are really, really good and you're excited about the show. And sometimes they're stinkers, but you still have to be excited about the show. Because you have to love all these, you know, babies equally. And you have to drink the Kool-Aid in the hopes that the viewers will, you know, follow suit and tune in. And sometimes they'll tune in and watch one episode and then they don't come back. And you know that you've done your job. You got them to drink the first episode. And then they saw this. They saw it. They were like, yeah, it's not as good as the promos. My job is done.
Yeah.
The promos were great. The show, not so much. Not my problem.
That's kind of indicative of just marketing as an industry. You know, you kind of got to believe in what you're selling, or people can kind of see right through it, especially in this day and age. So,
that's right.
We keep saying entertainment marketing, and I think, you know, the obvious first thought is like ads and things, but I feel like it's got to be deeper than that. And that, you know, marketing a show, getting ready to launch a show, advertising for an element of the entertainment industry has to be multifaceted. So talk to us a little bit about kind of the nature of the job like that. Like, what sort of different things have you done working in the entertainment marketing industry?
Well, my department was primarily the on-air department, meaning we did all the promos and the trailers, the videos that promoted the shows. But we also did the key art, you know, the billboards, the bus boards. We did online, you know, you name it. We would extrapolate every element of the creative into every platform you can imagine. We also worked on streaming shows as well. But, you know, to do this kind of work, it takes a lot of interesting skills. You have to be not only creative, you have to be able to articulate your ideas to someone. You know, it's all up here and you're like, in your head, you're like, but this is such a great idea. I could just totally see it. And you have to be able to visualize it already done almost too, to be able to sell it to somebody else. You're not just selling these ideas to your boss.
Right.
President of the network, who's like, I don't get it. Why would you want to sell CSI like that? You know, it's, you have to sell it to the stars sometimes because they're, maybe you're doing a shoot with the star of the show and they had to be convinced this is a good idea for them to do. You have to sell it to the showrunner, you know, it's their baby. They've created the show and, you know, your message has to be on point for what they want. You can't sell something that the show isn't, obviously. It's truth in advertising, just like you said. So you have to be able to be a good writer. You also have to be able to defend your work. You know, you might produce this amazing campaign for a show and then the producer sees it and goes, oh, I hate it. But you have to be able to stand there and go, well, I'm sorry you don't like it. We'll work with you to try to make it to your liking. But at the end of the day, it's got to, you know, we work with a lot of research, you know, viewer research that supports why we went down this road with the creative. You know, it's not just me coming up with fun ideas. Yeah. It's like, it's research based and it's viewership. Like, what's the demo you're going for? What's the, even though it's, you know, people don't sit there with the remote controls all day long, just letting it, you know, go straight through from 8 to 11 anymore. It's a little bit more sophisticated. People bounce around. CBS does have older demographics and they do tend to watch things in linear, you know, just one thing after the other sometimes. So anyway, it's a lot of different skills. You have to be able to have a lot of stamina. It's very fast paced. It's always changing and evolving. We respond to things in real time. Like, for example, I'll never forget, we had the Grammy Awards. The Grammys were always on CBS, still are. And it was that the Grammys were on a Sunday, I believe, and a big story hit the day before, the Friday before, and it was the one where Rihanna got beat up by Chris Brown. And Rihanna was all over our advertising, and she was going to be a big participant in the show, and the whole show blew up. And also, you know, you had to rejigger the show and the marketing of the show, you know, in like hours.
Yeah,
you know,
wow.
You had to be able to work on time, change your creative. Same thing happened when Whitney Houston passed away right before the Grammys. We had, you know, we were scrambling. But that's what I'm saying. You just had to have a lot of stamina, had to work fast paced. You work with a lot of very creative people and very talented people. That's what's fun about it. It's a lot of fun working with the best in cinematography, the best designers and animators and musicians, you know, that kind of thing. It's a blast. It's really fun.
Yeah. And there's, I imagine, especially living and working in LA for this type of thing, that you are surrounded by kind of the best in terms of designers and other creators, that you kind of need a full team, right, of people like this to help you out.
Oh yeah. We had my department consisted of about 130 people.
Wow. Yeah. I love hearing you talk about it. This is kind of a loaded question, but I am going to ask you to talk about some projects you've been a part of over the years that stand out to you, you know, whether they're your favorite, whether they're the most prominent. You touched on a couple already, but maybe they're some that you're the most proud of even. So talk to me about some projects that stand out to you.
Huh. Wow. That's tough. There's been so many over the 2+ decades I worked at CBS. I worked on so many great shows, but for every hit show, there's dozens of shows that didn't make it. You know, to get a hit on television is just like winning the lottery.
Yeah. And viewers don't typically even think about that sort of thing, because they don't realize it, you know?
No. Yeah, I mean, I worked on, you know, like I said, Survivor, Big Bang, Two and a Half Men, Young Sheldon, Criminal Minds, several NCISs and CSIs. There's so many spinoffs. One of my very favorite shows was The Good Wife. I don't know if you remember that one. I love that show. It was a very elevated drama starring Juliana Margulies, and I was very proud of that show. It was quality television. It was the best show we had, I think. You know, we did Amazing Race, Big Brother. We did all sorts of stuff. I think some of the stuff I'm most proud of are the years that we would have the Super Bowl.
Ooh.
Because, you know, the Super Bowl would rotate every three, you know, it goes through all the different mm-hmm. networks, and mm-hmm. it was our turn to have it. Those were the years where the pressure would be super, super hard on us, because, you know, your promo, your 30-second spot would be right next to a $50 million Coca-Cola spot. And so, and we didn't have those budgets, obviously. It's a, you know, it's a very different world that we did besides a Coke or a Budweiser spot. But your work needed to stand it right next to it in the same commercial pod, you know? So I think some of the best work we ever did was for those kinds of opportunities. And we pull out all the stops and do big shoots for them. One of my favorite shoots was for a show with Jordan Peele for the Twilight Zone reboot. It was on, it's still on Paramount Plus, I think. But we took over the entire Atlanta football stadium, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, because that's where the Super Bowl was going to take place that year. We had the whole thing to ourselves, and we shot Jordan on the 50-yard line doing this whole thing for the Twilight Zone. It was a super cool spot. And it's just so much fun, you know, stuff like that. And then to see it come out, you know, it's one thing to come up with the idea, but then the fun of it is having it actually come out the way you envisioned it. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, because there's so many opinions that get in the way and have to be heard and taken into account.
Because there's a lot of money at stake, right? There's a lot of dollars working for all of it. So
a lot. And you know, that spot, I just remember that spot had a lot of pressure because it was a big shoot, big talent. Those avails were, you know, the 30 seconds you're putting it on was worth millions alone, you know, just alone putting something in a spot like that. So a lot was riding on it. But it turned out great. It was just one of those things where it all turned out really, really well. And I was, and it won some awards as well. So that comes to mind as a recent one that I particularly was proud of.
Yeah.
So.
That's an interesting point. I've never thought of Super Bowl commercials in that way, in the sense that, like, the network, you know, you see the network spots during the Super Bowl, and it's because they're the network. They're going to, you know, pub their show and whatever they got coming up. But right. You don't want it to just be your average TV spot, watch CSI tonight. You know, it has to stand out because it's part of the Super Bowl ads. So,
well, I'm watching the Super Bowl commercials with some football in between.
Yeah, there you go. I don't think you're alone either in saying that. Yeah. What you just spoke on, you know, kind of puts it into perspective in the sense that to be successful in this industry, you know, you and I kind of talked about this before the podcast, you have to be a fan of what you're doing. Maybe it's easier for like marketing people to sort of think of it in this way, but how have you over the years continued to stay a fan of, interested in, engaged with, like, advertising? I mean, because it's easy to look at it and say there's creative aspects of this that appeal to me, but as like the nature of ads have changed, and just like the style that people prefer to see and the way that you market entertainment to people has changed, how have you stayed in it without losing your passion and without getting too burnt out? I know everybody experiences burnout, but you know, you've stayed a part of it. So how have you kept that going?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things that attracts me to it to begin with, is it's always changing. I can't picture myself sitting in, working at a, no offense to people who work at banks, but I can't imagine myself working in a typical 9-to-5, job where it's kind of, the same. You know, what makes it great and keeps you from burning out is the constant change. And if you're a creative person, you're always looking for a way to do something different. I never want to do the same thing twice. Like when you're struggling to come up with an idea, it's because you feel like you've done it all. And you're just like, I can't do that again. I've already done that one before. That concept I already done 6 years ago on a show. So it's like you're always challenging yourself to try new things. And with the nature of advertising constantly evolving with social so much, it just gives you a new challenge and a new way of like figuring out, how do I have impact and get my message across in a 10-second Instagram post or whatever. You know, it's just in the way that outdoor has completely changed with regard to these amazing three-dimensional video outdoor plays. It's stunning and it's so much fun. It just, in the Sphere in Las Vegas, oh my gosh, what a joy that is to come up with what can you put on that sphere. And it's so much fun to see what they come up with, right? Yeah. So with every new thing that gets invented or thought up of a place to advertise, from whether it be a chalk drawing on the sidewalk to some, you know, incredible product placement idea, you know, I love it all. And I just think that's what keeps it fresh.
Wow. Yeah. You got to love it. I have to imagine that in an industry like that, I guess in any big industry, where you have to constantly stay with the evolution of it, that if you give up, it's going to outrun you and it's going to fade away.
Yeah.
You touched on it. I think it's interesting now looking at the evolution of people's attention spans and places they like to consume advertising. And you kind of have to try to chase the consumer with the ads, cause they're less of a captive audience than they used to be, I think, you know?
Yeah. And it's everywhere. It's almost mind numbing how much, like, it's always funny. I mean, you've experienced this, I'm sure, when you're like, you'll Google something. Like, I'm in the process of redoing my house and I was looking at some wallpaper, online for my dining room. And all of a sudden now I'm just getting spammed with wallpaper ads. It's just like, oh my God, you're almost afraid to like Google, but it's everywhere. And, it's very tough to break through.
Yeah. Because it's everywhere. People have become numb to it. I mean, people pay for ad-free subscription services, and you know, now ads are set up in a way where we'll make you watch X. It's not like really like a typical commercial. It's like, well, you're going to watch a minute of ads every 10 minutes, and people just get on their phone and ignore it. And there's, you know, so
I mean, working hand in hand with what I do, you know, marketing and promotion is publicity. Publicity is the promo person's best friend, because that is the other leg of this. You know, you need the good, you need the publicity, you need the talent out there getting on the talk show, talking about their show, walking the red carpets. You know, it, you can always tell when somebody's got a project they're promoting, because all of a sudden they show up. Like Jodie Foster, she's everywhere all of a sudden, and I hadn't seen her for years, and now she's on two or three different shows, so you see her everywhere. It's like, it just, you know, you need the talent, you need the support of the publicity people. They're a big part of the machine that helps to break through.
Wow. Yeah. It's been evident talking to you from the get go, how creativity is one of your passions. And I think that it, you know, encapsulates a lot of different things. And so my question now is like, what does somebody like you who works in the realm that you do like for fun? Like what kind of creative, do you have any creative hobbies? Or are you just like so wrapped up with the demands of your work that, you know, that's where all your creativity goes?
I have to be doing something creative at all times. It's a sickness. No, I'm kidding. I actually have a podcast. I have my own podcast. And so when I'm not creating marketing, I'm talking about it with people like you. But can I do a shameless plug?
Please do.
Okay. So I left CBS television in 2020 and opened up a boutique agency with another person that worked with me at CBS, and we call it Room 15, and it's spelled RM15, and that's the name of our podcast, RM15. So if you're interested, it's available on every platform, every platform, all of them. So what I enjoy about doing that is, I'm sure you can understand doing a podcast as well, is just meeting interesting people, seeing how they tick, asking questions about what they do. Mine centers all on entertainment marketing. So I interview everyone from Dr. Phil, who was my very first guest, to people who are in, they develop shows, they're award-winning cinematographers, they're screenwriters. I love talking to people who are not doing exactly what I do, but people who are in the industry who benefit from what I do. Because marketing is part of everything. We're all marketers, all of us. I mean, the clothes that you decide to put on to walk out the door to go to work is marketing. How do you want to present yourself? You know what I mean? You may not think about it in those terms, but it is. It's marketing, personal marketing. But anyway, that's what my podcast is about. And we've had a couple of seasons of it and some very interesting guests. And I think... if there's some young people out there interested in this, I think if you were to listen to a few episodes, you might actually learn something. You know I learn stuff, even though I'm in the business and I've worked with these people closely. I don't really know what they do because I'm busy doing my own thing in my own world. So it's kind of fun to sit and really learn, you know, that the deep detail aspects of what a screenwriter does. How do you become a screenwriter? How do you get an agent to be a screenwriter? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. If like she said, if you're listening and you have any interest at all, Room 15, RM 15, check out that podcast. And you nailed it. I mean, I've, in being a part of this podcast, we talked to everyone from every area of campus. We've had alumni, students, professors, all types of people on here. This episode has been especially fun for me because I have, you know, a marketing background. I've got a little bit of a passion for, you know, TV, film, music, just entertainment in general, sports. So it's been great picking your brain.
Well, thank you. Music is another passion of mine. It's another creative passion of mine. I don't play music. I don't play an instrument. I mean, but music is a massive tool in marketing. And so one of the things that I specifically love is matching that song with the perfect campaign. And so I work with a lot of the record labels in town to find those little songs or just little gems that would be just the perfect little, you know, part of the sound of a campaign. So, you know, it's just a lot of fun. And I would love for more people from Louisiana Tech to come out here and get in the business.
Yeah, from one LA to the other, right? It's just it's as easy as that, right? It really isn't.
That's great. That's it.
I got a little fired up. You were talking about, you know, picking the right music to suit something. I think that's one aspect of marketing that is, I think all of marketing is part art, part science, and it's a hybridization of the two. So,
craft.
Yes.
Absolute.
Yeah. So,
think about the Apple commercials. Think about, you know, that great piece of music that they'll put with that, you know, the new iPhone or whatever. It's magic when it's right.
Mm-hmm. And then when you catch somebody, you know, a week later humming a song because they heard it in a commercial, you nailed it, you know?
Yeah. And then there's a TikTok video.
Yeah, exactly.
People dancing to it. Uh-huh. It just takes on a life of its own.
Lori, I really appreciate you making time for us today. I know that you obviously very busy. If you're listening and you couldn't tell, I don't know what to tell you because Lori's very busy.
I'll always have time for Louisiana Tech.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope you get a chance to make it to this LA at some point soon and check out the campus. It's certainly on the up and up. It's certainly always growing and always evolving. So when you're out this way, let us know, and hopefully we'll stay in touch. And again, thanks for making time with us today, Lori, and we'll see you around.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Beyond 1894. Please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about this episode, you can check out our show notes. Beyond 1894 is produced by Louisiana Tech University's Office of University Communications.